We're good to go.
Please start the show right here, right now.
Yeah.
Post it.
Yeah, just.
No.
Yes, it's really good stuff. Put it at the end, outtakes.
Oh my God.
It's good.
It's good stuff.
It would be better if you could get Sam's expression.
Alrighty, I'm gonna go. Hello and welcome to another episode of Union Blue Radio. I'm your host, Sam Blazer. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Matt Suva and Allison Lucan. How are you guys doing today?
So good.
I'm good. You've blown the levels out and Allison's not loud enough all of a sudden.
I don't think I've talked that much louder. Am I doing all right now? Or
You got right up on that mic and it was a good time.
Does that mean we need to start over?
No, it's okay.
Yeah. You as the listeners now get a little treat, a little behind the scenes there for you.
And if Matt doesn't put the outtakes from our start at the end of this episode, I think you should all protest so that he does it in the future because it was funny.
Protest the results of this episode?
Yes.
Yeah. Protest the results. Well, we have a few Blue Jackets games to talk about.
Goals!
First, yeah, bunch of goals. First,
a few.
Yeah, before we get to the whopper of a game that was against Montreal, let's talk about the Dallas game that was an overtime win. 3-2, Foligno, Gagne, and Seth Jones had the goals there. Werenski and Saad had a couple of assists. What did you guys think of that game, and how impressive was that to you on a scale of 1 to 10, Matt?
On a scale of 1 to 10?
I'm going to need it.
I'll give Bobrovsky's performance at least a 9. Dallas just shot like crazy. Shot everything. Shot the lights out.
That's what they do.
But didn't shoot enough of the lights out because Bob held strong with 36 saves on 38 shots.
There's a JFK joke in there, but I'm not going to make it.
No, wow. I'm going to protest this.
Well, there's multiple protests already involved in this podcast. What I thought was interesting in this game that was Seth Jones in overtime and what he was able to do. He was dominant when, you know, he didn't look like the dominant player that a lot of people were expecting. Werenski was like outshining him for a good portion of this season, but, you know, Seth Jones took over the game at the end and was skating like nobody's business and would almost single-handedly won the game. I agree with you, though, Matt. Bobrovsky was also a real key part of that game as well, and he's been a key part of the season overall. It doesn't get much better than what he's been doing. Allison, do you have anything to add about the Dallas game?
Well, I think it was a poetic justice a bit that after the LA overtime that Seth gets the overtime winner, and it was definitely a game that stuck in the craw, if you will, of the team. They talked about it over and over and over leading up to Friday's game, which I don't think anyone in the world saw coming.
No. I will say it was a weird game of balance with the Dallas game because so many players had good point performances, but it came balanced against the fact that Dallas just brought it as a team on the whole. So I think it's a sign of how when things click, it's really good for the Jackets, but they still have a lot of room to go.
Very true. Very, very true. Now, the Montreal game.
Oh, my God.
I cannot even discuss.
I know. There's a lot happening there. What did you guys think of that game? I'll close out the thoughts. I want to hear what you guys have to say first.
I feel bad for Al Montoya, but I also don't feel bad because that was so amazing. It's very complicated. That was the most goals in a single game in Jackets franchise history.
Correct.
And tied for the worst shutout loss in Montreal Canadiens history, which is more than 100 years of history. That's ridiculous.
It was, I mean, sitting upstairs in the press box, we were literally at one point taking turns watching the game for one another while the other looked up stats because it was nutty. I laugh now thinking about when Wenberg's goal was called back and when we were all like, oh, shoot, it would have been good to go up, I think at that point, 4-0? And then it just became completely unnecessary.
I mean, snowballing.
I can't even, my favorite goal, I must admit, was Josh Anderson's no-look backhand. Yeah. I'm not even going to call that a shot because I still don't think it was. He said he was just throwing the puck at net. But, I mean, that emblemized the game for me, right? Like, they were trying, but it was just everything was going in. Everyone said they, even in the locker room after, no one has seen a game like that ever.
Well, there was definitely a moment, I think it was either after 3-0 or 4-0, that Montreal just looked like they had the life sapped out of them. That is just kind of like, okay, we're good.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. It's okay with us that whatever this happens.
I completely forgot Shea Weber. I was not even aware he was on the ice.
8 different Blue Jackets had a multi-point game.
That's 16 players with a point.
Outrageous.
Outrageous.
Wennberg had a 4-point assist game, or a 4-assist game, 4-point night. Zach Werenski's passes continue to be just outrageously silly. 4 different players had a 2-goal game. The power play went 4-for-5. Oh, and by the way, Sergei Bobrovsky had a 30-save shutout. Like, what? Everything happened in that game for the Jackets.
It was a perfect storm, I'd have to say. It doesn't get much better than that. And I think it was something almost as a franchise that they needed. A lot of times, the Blue Jackets are the punching bag to a whole lot of people, and you know, being able to come out and do this and take it to a historically successful franchise, it's not only like good optics; it's a feel-good thing, at least for the fans. Just to be like, na 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 boo boo.
Well, and like
you saw a lot of that after the game as well.
Oh, for sure. The fact that their record after the game was 9-1-1, I mean, and that they hadn't lost in regulation yet this year. I mean, it was just. And that there were only, 3 NHL games that night. So, like, you know, the night prior, there had been, 12 games? So who's to say this would have gotten as much attention? But national media was all, you know, they were on Twitter saying, ESPN. I was trying to take the night off, and then I checked the scores, and now I'm tuned in. Like, it was everywhere.
Buckeye football game the next night, they were discussing it during the downtime and that blowout. Ridiculous.
Yeah, that lets you know how big it is on a national scale that, like, tens of millions of people watching that game, and they're even talking about that. But then again, that was also a pretty historical blowout. Yeah, but that's football. We're not going to be talking about that.
There was a lot of empty space in that game to fill, and good thing to fill, I guess.
Yeah. What's interesting is that Al Montoya had a .750 save percentage.
I know.
The next night, Michael Nuvrit, when he goaltending for Philadelphia, he actually had a lower save percentage than him the next night. Isn't that kind of unbelievable?
Montreal
came out and they just wanted to take it out on somebody, and apparently it wasn't going to be the Blue Jackets that night.
Well, that's the thing. You don't want to be the team that faces them after game.
The bad news from a Columbus perspective about that game is it was, in fact, only one game.
Correct.
And for as meaningful and ridiculous and historic as we want to make it out to be, and it is all of those things, in the grand scheme of this season, only 2 points.
Well, and I think Torts really did a good job of setting the tone after. I mean, and I'll tell you what, these guys are dialed into his message. I mean, there is consistency, room to coach to room. But yeah, I mean, it was fun, and it should never be forgotten for how much fun it was. But it's still just a tick in the win column for the Jackets, in the loss column for Montreal. At the end of the day, it means nothing more than any other win, any other game, any other night. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they had to prove that the next night playing against St. Louis, which ended up being a 2-1 overtime loss. Curtis McElhinney got his first start of the season, 9.33 save percentage. The game, compared to the night before, obviously they're tough to compare, but it seemed like night and day. It was completely different. You know, Montreal didn't really put the body on a whole lot of people. They're a small-ish team. Meanwhile, St. Louis is kind of built in a similar model to the Blue Jackets. So there's a lot of pushing and shoving afterwards, a lot of fights.
A lot of stepping on one another, apparently, come to find out.
And now that's part of the CBJ news. Seth Jones is out 3 weeks with a hairline fracture in his foot. Apparently, Patrick Berglund stepped on his foot, cut it open.
In the
first period, and he played throughout. And he never took off his skates, apparently.
Correct.
To try to keep the swelling and all that other stuff down, and he was afraid he wasn't going to be able to put it back on.
Correct.
How big of a loss is Seth Jones? We'll get back to the game in a second.
I mean,
huge loss.
Huge. And
he and Werenski were playing top pairing minutes and assuming big duties and putting up points and being productive, and all of that is gone from at least one half of that for a really busy 3 weeks.
I think it's going to be, I mean, not that it's ideal. It's certainly not. But I think it's going to be interesting to watch Werenski in isolation, if you will, from Seth, because it's an interesting, combination or alchemy that's happening between the two of them. I talked to Zach a little bit about it today, and something I found very interesting. He said that Seth has been very actively giving him feedback on every play, whether it's good or bad. And Zach said, you know, you get a lot of that from coaches and things like that. But he said it really matters a lot when you hear it from a teammate. And he said Seth has been very vocal with him, you know, good play, bad play, do more of that. So while, again, it's not ideal, I'm actually intrigued to see what we see from Werenski without Jones as his partner.
It is worth noting that, granted, in a special team situation and slightly less pressure in a grand sense, Werenski has been the guy on the power play for the Jackets.
Right.
So regardless of the Jones loss, not good at even strength, not good at penalty kill, not good for the Jackets, that is, to continue to have Werenski to drive the thus far outrageously successful power play, at least there is that kernel of hope that remains.
That's true. I still have faith that the defense can keep it together. And there has been a little bit of a new look there with Savard paired with him, at least in practice, and then Murray and Johnson going up, and then there's also Nudavara and Prout there. I'm wondering where they're going to go from here because they have some options. They have Scott Harrington, they have Cody Golubov down, and they have a couple of prospects that I'm sure they're intrigued with, especially like Dylan Hetherington, who did quite well last year in the Calder Cup final. So I'm not too worried. I'm not worried about the depth, you know, getting solid minutes from there. I'm more worried about the top end minutes and who's going to eat those up effectively.
Yeah, effectively is the key word
yeah,
there for
exactly.
sure.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's in. I think with Seth Jones being out 3 weeks, I think Werenski could possibly. Savard has the tools. That's something that I've noticed is that he can skate. He can. He does have a good slap shot. He does mm-hmm. have a good wrist shot. He just needs to put it all together in one fell swoop because he'll have a game where he does quite well in that regard, but the consistency just isn't there.
For sure.
And so I'm hoping that'll end up popping up sometime soon. Now, to talk about that St. Louis game a little bit more, Josh Anderson added another goal.
Impressive, this young guy,
yeah,
right?
He does not have any hesitation to his game. He's been yeah. absolutely unbelievable in that regard. Vladimir Tarasenko had the OT winner, which was... You know, Tarasenko doing Tarasenko things. There's not a lot you can do there on that goal. But, you know, Brandon Saad was a little weak defensively.
Was a little sod.
But Tarasenko, though...
He walked right over my pun, didn't he? Did you see that?
I heard it. I just was kind of like...
It's bad.
I wanted to talk about the Tarasenko play. Because Tarasenko, that's not the first or the last time that he's going to do that to
Correct.
Someone. Saad, you know, kind of did his best bullfighter interpretation there. But, you know, it's by the same token, when Tarasenko is as strong and as good of a shot as him, there's not a lot you can do.
Right.
If it's anyone else, you know, they might shoot that right into the pads, and they had been a lot of the night
right.
against McElhinney. So nothing to be, you know, mad about there, at least long term. I think getting the point is fine, but Allison kind of grimaced there.
I mean, I mean, we will never know, you know, what the players that Torts was specifically referencing in his post-game comments. But I think that, you know, a guy like Saad and the pedigree that he brings to the ice, I mean, his play in the overtime frame did stand out to me as perhaps it could have been a little bit better. And that's the second overtime where he's kind of had a gaffe, if you will, also against LA. I mean, Tarasenko is Tarasenko, clearly. But... Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. And I think Matt said it as well before we started recording. I mean, it was kind of a waste of one of McElhinney's best performances, too. He played so well, particularly having not played all season. So, I don't know. I mean, I was happy with the point for sure, but they could have gotten two.
Yeah.
And it's not going to get any easier. There's some upcoming games Wednesday, or what is that going to be? It doesn't matter. Whenever Matt puts this out, it'll be November 9th. against Anaheim. That wasn't a slight at Matt. That was just
kind of
like,
yeah,
I don't know why I'm saying
was,
tomorrow
actually.
Or, you know, we're trying to like put this down in the proper context. But then Thursday, November 10th is at Boston, and Saturday, November 15th against St. Louis.
Hockey
once
Fights
again.
Cancer Night.
Exactly. And out of those three games, which team worries you the most? Against Boston, you know, they got their butts kicked first game of the season. Anaheim is probably looking for some revenge. Is there a game in particular that you have circled this next week?
I would say that the Blues are probably the most threatening on paper anyway of all of those teams that Anaheim, I don't know. I don't know what to make of them yet this year. We'll see how much Carlisle significantly impacts them or not. Boston will be tricky because it is a travel day on a back-to-back, which is that stinks.
During the week.
Annoying.
Stinks from a Jackets perspective. But the Blues of those three teams are the one that, in my mind anyway, I consider more of a contender and therefore the harder game.
Agree.
Agree on all fronts? You think that St. Louis is going to be the game in the circle?
I think it's the game that I think the win is most meaningful. How about that? Switch it around. But I'm also interested to see, it's going to be interesting to see Bol back in Nationwide. They'll probably do a little thing for him, I'm sure, and I'm sure fans will be excited. But
do they retire his number then?
I think they wait till the end of the season, oh, okay. Honestly.
Just want to make sure.
But I would put most weight in a win over St. Louis.
I think I'd feel the exact same way. I think taking down Anaheim again is a good sign, at least from like a psyche perspective,
right?
Because those California teams are so hard to beat, and after they beat them the way they did in Anaheim, they're surely going to be coming in firing on all cylinders. And I think, I'm not sure about the status of Lindholm, but it's getting close that he'll be returning. And once they have him in the lineup, they're, you know, a completely different team. But their bottom six is still pretty atrocious.
What a weird schedule, right? I mean, how many of these, how many series are we like wrapping up and they still haven't played a Metro opponent?
It's so odd.
Right? Like St. Louis, Anaheim, San Jose. It's crazy. It's weird.
For sure.
Get all of the oddballs out of the way. I guess that makes the latter parts of the schedule a lot more meaningful from a... Yeah. From a standings perspective.
The first Metro game is next Friday, I think, versus the Rangers. I might be wrong.
Interesting.
there's a Washington one Tuesday.
Oh, that's
that,
right.
But still.
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Washington here.
Yeah.
And then Washington away the following Sunday. Right. Okay. But so again,
all of a sudden, the Metro clicks, but it's been this long.
Weird.
Now, to hop off of Allison's Saad comments just a moment ago, today they actually, Sonny Milano, who was called up, was going in and out for him in the line rushes. Do you guys think Sonny Milano, who's just recently called up, is going to be in the lineup anytime soon, or do you guys think that he's just up here still for insurance purposes?
I will say he'll be in the lineup.
Ooh, I like that. That's a good take. Well, what's your reasoning, if you don't mind me asking?
I think that John Tortorella has shown us that he is a coach that will ask a player to watch the game if he thinks they're not performing. I mean, he did it to Sam Gagne the second game of the season. And I think that if he continues to feel the way he felt after Saturday's matchup, I think that there's going to be some mixing up for sure. I have no knowledge. That's totally my guess.
Not an insider. Not
outsider. Not,
yeah, exactly. Matt, what's your thought? Do you think Sonny Milano sees a game?
I have no rationale for this. I'll say no with no reasoning whatsoever to create this intrigue and opposition.
Want to place a bet?
Allison.
Let's have a bet.
Oh, I don't bet on things.
What? Yeah, Sam, let's make a bet.
All right, sure. What do you want to bet on?
I don't know. What should we bet?
I don't know.
Candy.
Candy. You see, now you're making it lame, Matt. This needs to be a hard-hitting
bet.
Here,
listen, how about this? The listeners, if they tweet us, they can tell us what the bet. They can propose options for the bet.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm going to say Milano goes in the lineup in the next three games. And you're going to say no?
And I'll say no just for the sake of this, even though I do think he'll be
Because Matt's lame and won't take a bet.
Yeah, and I'll just be a part of it.
But okay.
Perhaps a loser.
What I think about...
Whoa.
Milano, overall, he was interesting last year only for the fact that he didn't necessarily play with the most skilled players all the time. He was kind of moved up and down the lineup in his few games that he played. The lineup now is almost optimized to its like highest potential. So being able to see him play with some real strong offensive players, no matter where he is, third line, fourth line, is going to be exciting to see if he does get in.
Right.
I don't know if he'll end up getting in against these next three people or next three clubs, just because of how rough and tumble they are, and he has more of a finesse game.
Good point.
But it remains to be seen, and it'll be fun to keep an eye on that as well. After one of the games, I forget exactly which game it is, but Tortorella came out with some Corsi and Fenwick.
It was today.
Oh, was it?
Monday,
it was today.
After
it was
practice.
Today? I apologize. John Tortorella had some comments about Corsi and Fenwick that are ruffling some feathers, causing the hockey analytics Twitter to go into a tizzy. What did you guys think of those comments? Do you guys have anything that you want to say? Matt, do you want to wax poetically about this?
So, Jeremy, of our very own Buckeye State Hockey.
Love Jeremy.
Tweeted and included a passage from an article from BlueJackets.com written by somebody.
Who? Me?
Why, yes, it is. Noting that John Tortorella in a week, 2 weeks ago when this was written, had said that he was paying special attention to shot attempts for his team. That
is Corsi.
For those that listen to our groundbreaking episode, Stats 101, you may remember that has a fair amount to do with Corsi because it is Corsi. So my question, and apparently this follow-up either didn't happen or wasn't reported, is the phrasing at issue here? Is the word the problem? Because if that's the case, it's a bit disingenuous to say that he's really anti-Corsi or whatever when it appears that everything else he's suggested this season is pro-Corsi. And his post-game comments after the Montreal drubbing...
That was a good question.
A good question asked by someone
Me!
On this podcast. His post-game questions... He discussed how it's important for the defenseman to activate and be mobile and be moving forward. These are all ideas that stats proponents support. And in words, all of the coaching-related objects to that seem to mesh up with all of the Corsi stuff. Whether or not he likes the word Corsi seems irrelevant to me, or at least that's how I view it.
Allison?
So we should probably put like timestamps to start my rant and end my rant, Uh-oh. Shouldn't we? No. Listen, here's the thing. First of all, the NHL can't even agree with the same words that the stats community uses. On NHL.com, they're called shot attempts. And on our more traditional stat sites that a lot of us frequent, it's still called Corsi, which is fine. But my point is that whether you call it Corsi or shot attempts or blue bananas, it's all the same thing.
Blue bananas?
Blue bananas. I think that when you talk about the information that teams get, I think first and foremost, we all have to recognize that it's probably fair to say that a lot of the information teams are operating against is proprietary and not stuff we look at. So if the Blue Jackets or insert team name here is operating off something completely different, they're not necessarily going to tell us that because that is their competitive advantage. So to extend that thought, if someone doesn't call Corsi Corsi, and I've talked to many people in the hockey community who are believing and living the concepts of the analytics community and just using different words, if they're not calling it Corsi, that doesn't mean they don't buy into it. The comments from Torts were in context of looking at scoring chances, and his point in the moment, in my opinion, was about taking a bigger picture view when you evaluate a player or a team, which I think anyone in the analytics community would agree with also. But, you know, it's a quote. It is, in fact, what he said. But the reality is that if we have people who agree with concepts or certain pieces of data and just call it something different, that doesn't mean they don't believe it. End rant.
I agree with both your points. I really don't have much more to add after what you guys said. You guys both had nice, eloquent points, so I'm not going to add much to it and, you know, sully the podcast anymore.
Great hosting over there.
Yeah, it's exactly.
A value add right there.
I'm guiding you guys into the promised land. All right.
Did our friends in our Slack chat have any other valuable insights that we did not share?
I don't think so. I think they're just talking about fantasy hockey most of the time. So
I will say, Danny,
I'm doing great in our fantasy hockey league.
Danny had a funny response to Jeremy pointing out that maybe Torts just doesn't call it Corsi. She said he's like the boss who hates your idea until he can present it as his idea and then it's the best idea.
I think there is something to be said about that.
Absolutely. Sure.
Is that if you are able to, you know, come about it at your own pace and,
that's right,
you know, put it into your own terms and getting able to, like, understand it, then, you know, that's okay.
In a broader sense, this also speaks to how there's a communication issue between...
For sure.
How you present your information to a particular audience versus another audience, that and this is applicable no matter what situation, that if you're telling an NHL coach who does not have a stats background, but is a good communicator and motivator and understands X's and O's, communicating your statistical information in a way that makes sense to them is very different than how you communicate in a way that makes sense to a bunch of nerds on the internet.
For sure. And I think, too, like it depends on if John Tortorella was ever in an environment where someone used Corsi and Fenwick at him relentlessly and it didn't show value to him and it was presented in a way he couldn't comprehend, of course he's going to think it's bad. We would all have the same reaction to a concept we can't understand.
I got to admit, Matt, you know, explaining his points with a beard, it just feels like so gravitas. Much more like, yeah, exactly. He just seems so much more wise now.
It's the very, gravitas like you weren't of before. The beard.
It's a yes. Very visual podcast where obviously you can tell that.
It just seems like your voice is, you know, it's very James Lipton-y. That, like, you know, it's like, here when you, are the
when
the
you get to the pearly gates, what do you want God to tell you?
It's awkward.
I like awkward. It.
What's your
like
favorite it. Swear word?
Oh my goodness.
I like this podcast.
Oh no.
Moving past the Blue Jackets news, I guess we can talk a little bit about the NHL. There's been some kind of, you know, breaking news, at least within the past couple hours. Jacob Trouba signs for 2 years, $3 million AAV. I forget what that means, but, you know, we all know
average.
What it means.
And,
yeah, average annual value, right? Yeah, okay. What do you guys think of the Trouba signing? Do you think that's a sign of things to come, or is there more to it?
I believe it is Jeff Merrick on Twitter, who, among other people, but he's the first that I noticed particularly, that said that contract is very friendly to being traded. So Trouba, through his agent, actively asked to be moved out of Winnipeg. If that feeling still stands, then by taking, for what the kind of defenseman he is, a relatively modest contract, that's pretty easy to move. We'll see what happens. Trouba's really, really good. He's good at scoring. He's good at the shot metrics. It's a momentary boost to Winnipeg, at least. We'll see how long he stays.
Allison?
I have nothing to add.
Okay, nothing wrong with that.
The beard has spoken.
Oh, God.
The beard has spoken. I wonder where they go from here, because obviously he fits into the lineup. You can put him in there pretty much anywhere, but that's the problem, is that he wants to play at, you know, a much higher level. Anybody who has an opening in the top two pairs on the right side is going to be interested in him. Are there any teams in general that you guys think should be going after him? I know Boston is one that Jeff Merrick has brought up, and Matt's talked about it a couple times as well. I think Arizona is an interesting team to talk
They're
about.
They're a cap team now.
Yeah, exactly. They're a cap team. But they have some young players, and I think adding a player like him next to Oliver Ekman-Larsson could, you know, be a big boon, but I don't know if they're trying to compete anytime soon. So maybe that's a little bit misguided. But Matt, Allison, do you have any other thoughts on
the coach? Also posited it could be Carolina.
They would be unbelievable at that point.
Yet right now they are not.
That's true. They have a great defense. They have a great defensive core.
I guess the real question is what does Winnipeg want? What are they willing to accept? And who's willing to pay up for that?
Right.
I have no information about this whatsoever. I feel like it would be amazing/terrible for Columbus if Pittsburgh went after Trouba.
Oh gosh.
Like that, they have a lot invested in Olli Maatta. Trouba's way better than Maatta. To move Maatta to get Trouba, that would be a Letang and Trouba mayhem over there.
They'll do whatever it takes. It doesn't matter.
They'd be in Trouba. Or we'd be in Trouba.
Yeah, the Blue Jackets would be in Trouba.
Because their defense would matter.
Oh, there we go. Now, that my friends, is the perfect pun. You won't hear a better one than that.
Goodness.
Moving past the puns.
We're so sorry.
Toronto Maple Leafs, Vancouver Canucks had themselves a little bit of a fight.
Kerfuffle.
Yeah, kerfuffle. Most notably, Nazem Kadri had a huge hit on Daniel Sedin. What'd you guys think of the hit? What'd you guys think of the game? I know, Matt, you're not a big fight fan. I'm kind of, you know, moving slower and slower towards the anti-fighting stance. But let's just talk about the hit first off, and then you can move on to something else in the game.
I did not like the hit. It was funny. I actually thought the hit was reminiscent of the hit Foligno took in Carolina last year. And then it came out today that it was that kind of hit exactly that Yarmo had gone up battling for to make illegal in the GM meetings. And Pierre LeBrun had a bunch on it. And then there was a TSN write-up I'm trying to find where they talked about how he got very little support. There was some. I guess Pittsburgh was one of the teams that was backing it also. But didn't like the hit at all. I think in the culture of hockey, that's when a fight like what we see ends up happening. And I mean, then you're like, well, okay, now I get it. And it's entertaining as heck to say there were goalies and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But don't like the hit. Don't like it at all.
I agree. It's by whatever textbook definition is, the point of contact was not the head. And
he grazed the shoulder, like barely. And so the people who are going exactly by the book are saying that that wasn't the primary point of contact.
Right.
But it's a defenseless player getting blindsided.
Here's the quote from the TSN article. It says, "I always try to be where we discuss things and people can agree to disagree," Kekalainen said. "When we leave the room, we all agree. The rule is good. The only thing I wanted to see changing is that I wanted to see the player always be able to protect themselves. And when you're in the act of shooting, like Nick Foligno was, I think he was unable to protect himself. Those are the type of hits I'd like to see come out of the game. We need physicality. We need hits. Sometimes you're going to see someone hit clean and the head is going to snap back. Or there's going to be head contact on a good hit. I'm fine with that. But he wants to get Rule 48 rewritten. And then he's getting support from Pittsburgh, Chicago, New Jersey, and Florida at the time."
Wonder if that's now also support from Vancouver.
Well, Vancouver came out and put out an official statement saying they did not agree with the ruling, but that they would move on.
Tough stuff. Tough stuff.
Tough stuff.
That's how we end that segment.
No,
wonderful.
There's really not much to add at that point. And then the hit was terrible. You know, there's not anything else to say. So I'm just saying, you know, tough beans. You know, for Vancouver.
Beans.
You
just
know,
didn't cook the beans in there.
Yeah. And then Toronto got away with one there. I did like Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner singing
"Loved
It" on the bench.
Loved it.
They're just, you know.
And the best was
not
just
necessarily oblivious, but they're just kind of like, we're not going to take part
in
it.
The best was the flat affect, too. Like, they were just kind of sitting there, like, totally just, like, no emotion. And then Jon Bon Jovi tweeted at them and told them they did a good job.
That's what put it over the top.
So good. 100%. God bless.
Moving on to some Metro news, a couple of things that I actually missed out on. Travis Hamonic is out for 4 to 6 weeks, which is
big blow.
Big blow, considering that the Islanders have kind of been floundering, trying to figure out what they're going to do on defense and going to do on offense. It's just not been a good situation, and with their goaltenders. So that's a big blow.
Did I see today that Cal Clutterbuck was listed on the first line with Tavares?
Yes, and their new signing, Andrew Ladd, is on the fourth line.
Ooh. Tough start to the year.
Yeah, tough stuff. Tough stuff. But continuing into the Metro, Pittsburgh finally got Sidney Crosby back, and Sidney Crosby
is good at hockey.
Yeah, taking the game back over again.
Decided he was tired of Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews talk.
Exactly. 10 points in 6 games played.
6 games, people.
8 goals in 6 games, tied for the NHL lead.
Insane.
He's pretty good. That's kind of underselling it a little bit. But do you think that he's going to keep up on this pace? Apparently, if he keeps up on this pace, he's going to pass Wayne Gretzky's goal scoring record he set like way back when, the 50 in 38 games.
I'm fine with that.
I mean,
Do you think he can?
I doubt that will happen.
Oh, interesting.
I would be interested in seeing it because I think Sidney Crosby has the capability. You know how a lot of people talk about Jonathan Toews, that, you know, he could be this like 50 goal scorer and things like that. I think in all seriousness, Sidney Crosby could be like, you know, a prolific goal scorer
for sure.
He wanted to. He does have, you know, shoot the puck an awful lot, but I think he could, you know, do it even more.
Can he
has
eclipse
the puck
Kane
on his-
from last season? Yes. Let's say yes.
Yes. Let's say yes. Let's say yes. Now, to close out the show before go to some plugs, what was the better, you know, non-necessarily NHL thing this past
tangentially
week?
Tangentially hockey stories.
Was it the dinosaur skating or was it the bomb-sniffing dog puck drop in Anaheim?
So we will post both of these in the post with this podcast.
So good.
If you didn't get to see it, I think everyone in the world retweeted. There was a dinosaur at a public open skate. Do we know where that was?
I don't think so. I'm looking at it now to see. But
soundtracked with some music, dinosaur, inflatable, person in an inflatable dinosaur costume on skates, skating around.
Weren't they figure skates?
Yes, they are figure skates.
Doing some jumps and spins.
I watch this thing. Trex Tuesdays. T-Rex Tuesdays. Shut up. T-Rex Tuesdays. And what's even better, here's what's even better. Is that Trex the T-Rex, listen, gets on the ice at first, and I was like, oh, this poor individual got put in this costume and doesn't know how to skate. And then, for like the next minute, it's like doing like triple sow cows and like flippy flippies.
I thought this was going to be, have you seen the gif of the Toronto Raptors inflatable mascot that flails and falls over? That's what I thought.
It's so funny.
That's what I thought we were getting into. And instead, it's this dinosaur skating around. It was incredible.
It's so good. I'm watching it now and I'm just, I'm delighted.
See, I think that you guys are all on the dinosaur train. I'm all about the bomb-sniffing dog dropping the puck.
I love both of them.
The bomb-sniffing dog dropping the puck was unbelievable. I was watching that, and I was just wanted to like pat him on the head and just be like,
well, and they cut it off. We needed more.
That
is true. We needed more.
There's a video of it that the NHL has posted. You see the dog coming out, sitting, holding the puck in its mouth.
In its mouth.
The whole time.
Such a good dog.
And then being commanded to drop a little hand symbol, it looks at the master like, oh, okay. Then he drops it.
But then he went for pets. That's what I'm talking about. I wanted to see him get love from the players after. It was
Getzlaf
sweet.
Petted him. Giordano didn't seem to interact with the dog.
I got
to
say, those pets per 60. Oh, real high on Getzlaf.
Getzlaf's all about it. Someone in our Slack chat, not me, I'm not going to take credit for this. Someone suggested would have been better had they shook the dog's hand.
I think it was Jeremy. Yeah.
Would have been A+.
Yeah. Would have
been the best.
Would have put it over the top of the dinosaur.
Absolutely.
Now, I think this is a perfect time to transition into plugs. What do you guys think? I tend to agree.
You agree with yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Shocking.
Of course I do. Of course I agree. Matt, you can start it off, you know, with your cackling over there.
Yeah, really.
Sure. I would like to plug the band Japandroids. They're a Vancouver-based band.
Everyone loves them.
I love them so much. Their last album called Celebration Rock is my favorite of this past decade. It's incredible. It's loud guitar rock anthems. They're really good live, too. They played at the Newport a couple years back. They have a new record coming out in January, and they posted their first single, and it's real good.
Allison, what's your plug?
My plug is for Wednesday, because the election will be over.
Hooray!
That's a good one.
That's my plug.
That's like the best plug that we'll ever have. I 100% agree. Especially being in a swing state, you don't have to see those ads anymore. I 100% agree. I am going to plug the TV show Gilmore Girls. I have been watching that recently. I absolutely love it, because with all this stuff that's going on around us, the show is like just so innocent. There's like nothing bad happening, and so it's just like, it's like comfort food as a TV show. You're just like watching it and you're just like, okay.
Is it like Bob Evans' Chicken and Noodles?
It's actually very, very similar to that. You just like, you throw it on when you like want something to like, you know, like stimulate you, and you're just kind of like, all right, cool, this is like happening. And then there's like you know, relationships and stuff like that, but you know, you're not too invested that like, you know, it's like breaking your heart. And mind you, I'm only like, you know, halfway through the first season,
so maybe so your heart will be broken.
Exactly, maybe it's gonna start getting more intense. How could I know?
Wait till the episode when one of them pulls out the shiv, you know, and
yeah, exactly. This actually turns into like Orange Is the New Black, but what? Matt,
then it turns into late night Taco Bell. It's no longer Bob Evans.
Yes,
Orange Is the New Black is late night Taco Bell, and Gilmore Girls is Bob Evans.
No. Orange is the New Black is a completely different genre.
Okay.
What we're saying is that, you know, at that point, Gilmore Girls would then be...
Oh, I see.
Late night Taco Bell. We should, like, one time just, like, compare people to food. I think that'd
compare
be...
Compare people to food?
Yeah, like NHL players to food. I think that'd be a good episode where we just, you know, we just go around and describe different NHL players as different pieces of food. Do you not agree, Matt?
I feel like there's a lot of objectifying that will become from this.
We'd have to plan, but I'm open for this anytime.
we'd have to plan. I like that.
It has to be tasteful.
Oh, my God. That's spicy, Matt.
Ooh, boy. With that being said, you can follow me at @_Blazer. You can follow Matt at @ZeekBud. You can follow Allison at @AllisonL. You can follow the website at @BuckeyeSTHockey. You can go to the website itself, BuckeyeStateHockey.com, and read some of our articles after we switched over to Sports Daily. If you can find us, good for you.
God bless Sam.
With all that being said, anything else before we go?
This is off the rails.
Help us find our bet.
Yeah, help us find the bet.
Interact with us.
Exactly.
Interact. Because we're so fun.
Engagement. Please clap. Content. Yeah. With that being said, until next week, bye.